Welcome to Throwing Light. This is episode 14, Political Anxiety. I don't know what I'm doing with my life. So before we get into the show, a couple of announcements, or maybe just one. So I have a Patreon account now, and if you've never heard of Patreon, it's this really fabulous way to support artists and makers and musicians and me, if you so choose, podcasters, obviously. So basically, you can sign up to contribute like $3 a month or $9 a month. It goes up, but you don't have to. I think you can even change it to just like a dollar a month with the contributions combined. But yeah, so, and also, you know, helps me buy coffee and support other artists and get through grad school and all of that stuff. So it's all kinds of good. And when you sign up, depending on kind of the level that you sign up, you get stuff in return. So it's not all just about me, of course. So let's get on with it. The heart of this episode, in the last episode, we talked about manifesting for dummies and how to use that as a really helpful way to alleviate anxiety. And that is really good on a personal micro level. Like if you're struggling with anxiety, personal stuff, that can be really helpful. But one of the things that is important to me in this podcast is that it's not just the micro personal level. It's communal. It's more than just about us as individuals, and it's us as a community, as a world. And so pre-paving to alleviate anxiety is well and good if you're stressed about like an upcoming test. But if you're stressed about who the president of the United States is and whether or not he's going to do or say something heinous, you know, that's not something you can just pre-pave away. And so I did this live Facebook thing right after the election, and it was kind of a way to create a safe space after the election for people who were feeling isolated and alone. So this is sort of a throwback. There's some things that I'm going to talk about again that I talked about there, and then there's some new stuff. So I'm going to touch on fear, hope, mental health, and maybe some Game of Thrones spoilers. It's the Thursday after Game of Thrones premiered, so I can't not talk about Game of Thrones, right? But first, fear is, I think, often a helpful emotion. It can paralyze you, though, and that's when it's not so helpful. But it can be used for courage, commitment, love, creativity. You can harness your fear to do all sorts of really cool things. But, of course, it can also be used to incite cowardice and anger and hatred and reaction rather than action. I talked about this in the Facebook Live thing, but the way our brains are wired is really interesting. So we naturally, evolutionarily, have a tendency to focus on the negative. So say someone in a 2-minute span gives you a criticism and a compliment, or you get a 97 on a paper and you're looking through the teacher's notes and there are several like good jobs or way to, you know, this was really good point. But then you also see that you spelled there incorrectly twice. And so your teacher has knocked off a point. We're kind of wired to focus on the criticism. So you start thinking like, how could I be so stupid? Like I could have gotten 100 if I had just, I know how to spell there. Like, what was I thinking? Never mind that you just got a 97 on the paper. In order for a compliment to receive the same brain space as a criticism, you have to hold it in your head for 15 seconds. So if you hear like a bunch of good stuff And then you hear one bad thing and it's like sticking out like a sore thumb. Then what you want to do is go back to the good thing. Go back to the thing that is good and true about yourself. I made a good point there. That was insightful. And you want to think about it for 15 seconds. And that's kind of the only way, like, we're wired to think about the negative. So we have to actually train ourselves to think about the positive. My personal theory on why Trump got elected is because we gave him so much airspace. And I actually wrote an article for HuffPost before he'd won the primary called The One Thing That We Can Agree On. And it was basically, I was saying, like, what we can agree on is that this guy is nuts. So let's take our attention off of him and focus on what we do want. So if we want Hillary Clinton, or if we want Bernie Sanders, I can't remember who the Republican primary candidates are now, but whatever it is, whoever it is, like, let's focus on them and not on this crazy person who obviously knows how to get ratings and is essentially feeding off of that, the way that our brains are wired to focus on the negative. And we didn't do that. And now, you know, he's the president, so he's always showing up doing crazy shit. And that's from my perspective. I guess it largely depends on what news you're watching. But I think we gave him too much airtime. And to a certain extent, now that he's the president, it's hard not to. But we can focus on what we do want in a president in the future. And we can focus on, I think it's easy to get sucked into nitpicking. Like, even Donald Trump, there are things that he does that, as president, that I would imagine are acceptable. We don't want to fall into the trap of nitpicking every little thing and, you know, where we're essentially tearing him limb from limb because of things that he's done in the past, or even the things that he continues to do today. And I'm not saying that he is acceptable as a president, but I am saying that I think it's almost like we have to choose our battles. And so in doing that, we're actually conserving energy so that we can fight the important fights. And even now, on an activist level, a lot of people are still fighting them now. And I'll get into that. One of the things that I'm learning in my own healing is that it's okay to make mistakes. And if that's true on an individual level, then it has to be true on a corporate, community, national level. But we can't fight what is evil if we can't accept that it exists. This is not passive acceptance. It's not being a doormat. Instead of fleeing from the darkness and fear and hate, or just kind of throwing our hands up in resignation? Is that a word? Resignation. We have to stand in it and with it. We have to say, okay, this sucks, but this is reality. It's not right, and I'll do what I'm capable of doing to change it. And we have to trust that we, as individuals with our own unique set of flaws and fears and mistakes and gifts and community, are strong enough to stay in the darkness and that it will not overcome us. And that's kind of a bit, I don't know, spiritual or strange maybe, but this is a scary time for a lot of people. And the way out is not to deny, to completely turn off the television or the news. It's not to double down into it either and focus on every little thing and freak out. And I've noticed that over the last couple of months, people posted less and less political stuff on Facebook. And some of that is just the nature of, I guess what I'm trying to say is, let's not forget. And let's not obsess. So, kind of moving on, I want to talk about hope next. And kind of as a transition, kind of a Game of Thrones spoiler, not really, but kind of, I don't even know if you would call it that. Samwell Tarly was in his, I don't know what it's called, the library, or the, he's becoming a maester, I guess. And He is not allowed to go to the restricted section of the library, and he really wants to because he's seen the White Walkers and he wants to do the research that he needs to do to figure out how to fight them so he can get the information to Jon Snow. And so he pleads with the Archmaester during this really weird scene where they're like taking a body apart for him to let him into the restricted section. And the Archmaester goes on this really interesting monologue where he essentially says, when the Mad King died, everyone thought, this is the end of the world. How will we survive? When such and such happened, we all thought, this is the end of the world. How will we survive? And, you know, thousands of years ago, we all thought, you know, this is the end of the world. How will we survive? And yet we have survived, I don't know how many winters. He may have said 1,000. And the wall has stood, and the wall is kind of their protection against the White Walkers. It's easy to think, oh my God, like Donald Trump is insane. How will democracy survive? Everything is just coming to a head. But I think that it is encouraging that we have survived crazy, incompetent presidents. And I believe we will survive this one. And kind of the nature of our democracy, I think historically, is that we move forward rights-wise, human rights-wise, for a couple of terms, and then we move way back. We don't just take a step back, like we fall back, but yet still we progress ultimately and we move forward. Krista Tippett in On Being interviewed, she's a journalist, and On Being is this amazing NPR podcast. She interviewed Vincent Harding, who was a civil rights activist and a good friend and sometimes speechwriter of Martin Luther King Jr. And he made the like remarkable point in that interview that the US is still a developing nation. We've only been doing this civil rights thing for the last 50 years. And that's scary and hard to swallow, but also oddly encouraging because we have progressed in the last 50 years, even if we have decades and decades to go. And when you think about it, I feel like even 10 years ago, LGBTQ folks were, they had no rights, almost no acknowledgement, especially from the transgender community. It was, you know, we are getting to a place, we have gotten to a place where we're having conversations and not everybody's agreeing because not everybody will agree. And that's not necessarily the point, but the conversations are meaningful and they're moving us in a direction that is, I think, ultimately helpful. We need a revolution that revolutionizes the very idea of revolution. Revolution is tipping the pyramid over. And the top becomes the one on the bottom, and we all rise up because everything is a reference to Hamilton. Since we're talking about Hamilton references, I keep thinking about the line. It's in, I think it's called The Farmer Refuted. The farmer who is opposed to the revolution is basically rallying on the side of Britain. And so while he's singing Hamilton, in between each line, he just has these like really funny little quips. And one of those lines is the have-nots are going to win this one. And that's what I keep coming back to. The meek will inherit the earth. A quick word about mental health. So, not a professional counselor yet, but I think that, and I talk about mental health here a lot, I think that if you struggle with a mental illness or a mental health issue, your battle is particularly hard in this political landscape. So you have to practice radical self-compassion. I think we all have the opportunity to be activists in this particular political landscape. I feel like I've said political landscape like 6 times, but we do. And you know, we don't have to, but that doesn't necessarily mean going on a march, I don't think. I think that you can be an activist on a micro level, teaching students, raising kids. If you're in a position where you're the boss, that means something. Kristen Neff wrote a book called Self-Compassion, and I may have mentioned it before. I want to do a whole episode on it. But I had to start over reading the book, so I have to, anyway, that's a whole So she proposes that there are three elements to self-compassion: self-kindness, an awareness of the shared human experience, and mindfulness. So self-kindness is almost, it's like talking to yourself as if you would a friend who's going through a hard time or a child. And then awareness of the shared human experience is, you know, knowing that you're not alone in this, and whatever it is, we're in it together, or you have people who are also dealing with the same shit that you're dealing with, and you're not alone. Mindfulness is, wish I had a better definition, because I can't, I mean, other than just noticing the environment around you and where you are in that environment and what is actually going on as opposed to what's going on in your head. So those three elements combined created this really helpful thing that you can say to yourself, and it's from the self-compassion book. This is a moment of suffering. It's part of being human. May I be kind to myself in this moment. May I give myself the compassion I need. And obviously you can say whatever. You can change it to whatever words resonate with you. This has been really helpful for me in terms of dealing with negative thoughts. So wrapping up, I wanted to, Rob Bell did this great podcast where he talked about the difference between the sacred art of journalism to expose corruption and injustice and what he called a billion-dollar media hairball. We're getting a lot of misinformation by people who want and need to make money, but you get to be the curator. You decide the news you read and watch and listen to, and I would highly suggest including good news in there. And, you know, give it 15 seconds to take hold. Krista Tippett, David Brooks, EJ Dion, Amanda Palmer talked about, this is not news necessarily, but in her book, The Art of Action, she talked about medicine music, music she listens to that has a calming effect on her. Obviously, the Hamilton soundtrack, because it's amazing. It's so good. It's so good. Like, listen from beginning to end and then listen from beginning to end again, because I don't know. I love it. I think the general idea is you don't have to walk around with this low-grade anxiety all the time. I hope it was helpful. I hope it was beneficial. Please subscribe if you're really digging this podcast, because it helps me reach more people. And thank you. Here it is, your break for verses. Fuck you, I yelled at the bottom of that stage at the top of my lungs until I was completely out of breath. And I promptly burst into tears and took off for the girls' bathroom. It wasn't fucking fair. Learning your lines is just not that difficult. I had more than he did. I'd done the work. I had waited my entire high school career to be the star of the show. I wasn't going to let Matt ruin it for me. I was fiercely embarrassed. I knew I'd shown my hand. I'd laid out in living color the spoiled brat I really was. If the show didn't go on, there'd be no one to blame but myself. When I finally made it out of that cigarette-infested bathroom, everyone but Mr. Yost was gone. I knew it. I'd blown the whole damn thing. Come on, he said, and there was nothing else to do but follow him to his car. He drove me to a fancy restaurant in downtown Charlotte called the Italian Kitchen. Neither of us spoke for a long time. In the silence, I attempted to come to terms with the damage I'd done. I have no idea if I apologized for my outburst. I'd spent my whole life hiding that part of me, playing the role of the good girl, secretly believing I was a little bit, just a little bit, above the rules. I don't remember anything else he said, except the moment he told me that I was destined for something great. He told me there was something about me he could tell. It didn't occur to me until years later that he may not have believed it. that he may have been just saying that so that I would pull my shit together and play the role I was supposed to play that night. But in the end, it didn't matter if he believed it. It mattered that I believed him. I got up on that stage and became the best Antigone I knew how to be. And in the dark years that followed, as I sunk deeper and deeper into the lies and deceit and hopelessness, whenever I could, whenever I happened into a sunlit part of the damp basement I'd created, I clung to his belief in me. That belief, or my own vanity, that I was greater than the hell I'd created, in the end, was the only thing that could have ever saved me.